All right, a little bit. Annika Samiach, everyone. Nice to see all of you. Thank you for joining. I'm excited to learn with you. I am excited to learn with you. When I often say that, and what I really mean is I'm gonna give a lecture, and I hope you participate. But I really, really don't mean that this time. What I want to do today is I want to try to take a very basic Gemara and try to think about it in a lot of different ways. And let me say it this way. I think often we sort of, when we think about Torah or learning, we sort of divide in different subjects. You know, there's halacha, there's law. There's maybe Gemara, there's sort of analysis, and then we have maybe more esoteric, there's philosophy, that's more about ideas and how to serve Hashem appropriately and how to think about the world, and then there's maybe a more mystical approach, and maybe we sometimes sort of think these are all totally separate, they're separate fields, they're separate genres. And what I'd like to show today is that the beauty of Torah Shebaal Peh, our oral tradition, the oral law, which I think Hanukkah is so celebrates, and so much of Hanukkah is about our not just our traditions in terms of the things we need to do, but our way of thinking, our approach to learning, our approach to how we think about the world. That so much of all that is connected, that law, halacha, and gemara, and mashava, and chassidus, it all comes from the same source. They all build off of each other, and they create the most beautiful picture that if you have the privilege of seeing, it's just so inspiring. So I want to think about a very simple, a seemingly simple Gemara with you today, very basic. And I want to show how to think about this one very basic halacha in a lot of different ways. And I hope they'll all build on each other. Okay, so before I have a little source sheet. I'm not going to go into it yet, and I'm wary of doing it this time of night anyway. So let me just quote a Gemara to you before I share it with you. This is a Gemara in Shabbos, Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph, 23a, and it reads as follows, okay? Amar Reb Chiya Bar Rav Ashi Amar Rav. So Reb Chiya, son of Ashi, said the name of Rav, bunch of rabbis said, i.e., Hamadlik ner shel Chanukah tzarich levarech. Someone who lights a Chanukah candle needs to make a blessing. I imagine that's not shocking to any of you. Anyone shocked by that? Okay, we know, of course, we know this, that someone who lights Chanukah candles makes a blessing. Good. Fine. That's okay. Rav Yirmiyah Amar, Rav Yirmiyah said, Haroa ner shel Chanukah tzarich levarech. Rav Yirmiyah said, someone who sees a Chanukah candle needs to make a blessing. Now that I imagine is a bit more surprising to you. Maybe some of you are familiar with this Gemara, but that's surprising. Someone who sees a Chanukah candle needs to make a blessing. Keep that in the idea in your mind. And then Gemara continues. It sounds like at this point, this is a dispute, right? This is an argument between two rabbinic authorities. One rabbi says only one who lights the candle needs to make a blessing. The next rabbi says, no, even if you see the candle, you need to make a blessing. Okay? And then we have Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda sounds like he makes a compromise. Rabbi Yehuda says, on the first day, someone who lights Hanukkah candles makes three blessings. And someone who sees Hanukkah candles only makes two blessings. And then on the second through the eighth day, we drop a blessing. You make two blessings if you light Hanukkah candles. If you only see Hanukkah candles, you make one blessing. That is because we only make Shachianu on the first day of Hanukkah. So on the second day through the eighth day of Hanukkah, if you light Hanukkah candles, you make a blessing of L'hadlik ner shel Chanukah and sha'asa nisim l'avoseinu. And if you only see Hanukkah candles, you only make the bracha of Sha'asa Nisim Ma'avosenu Bayamim Mahim Bazman Hazeh, he who performed miracles for our forefathers on those days at this time. Okay, good. So here's what I want to know from you, okay? And you're probably thinking, Rabbi, you know what? It's 8:07 at night. I'm not interested in some dry legal analysis right now. You're going to put me to sleep. But I want to show you that this is all very meaningful. So, but I want to start thinking, and I want to you to tell me, you hear the phrase, Haroa Ner Hanukkah Tzarech Levarech. Someone who sees Hanukkah candles needs to make a blessing. What questions do you have? What questions might you ask about that?
What blessing?
What blessing? Which good. Blessing? That is a basic halacha question. And we said, so the basic answer, that is Sha'asa Nisim. What else?
Does it matter if he owns it or if it's somebody else's or if he's already
made it? Who's hung your candles? Right, good. So Chaim's thinking, is it on enjoyment? Okay. So the question is, so what I want to show now is there's different types of questions you might ask about this, right? I guess to expect too much feedback is a big ask at this time of night. So I was hoping for the following, right? So some might think very practically and legally. So does that mean any Hanukkah candle? Like, let me ask you, how many Hanukkah candles have you seen, or different menorahs have you seen tonight?
A bunch. I mean, in the neighborhood, you see a lot.
Right. If you walk around, I mean, we're in Toronto over here. If you walk around Toronto, you will likely, just any busy street, you walk down, I don't know, Bathurst, or I live on Glen Grove, you'll see probably tens of Hanukkah candles, tens of menorah. So you have to make a bracha every single time? That's one blessing. So one type of question you might ask is, when do you make this blessing? Is it any time you see a Hanukkah candle? Does it matter if you've made the blessing? Does it matter if you lit already? Does it matter if you plan to light? And that's one sort of question you want to ask, okay? Then you might ask, now Rabbi Malevsky asked a sort of deeper question. I'm actually wondering if any of you will get to it. So we make this blessing. There's a practical question of when do you make the blessing? There's another question, you know, of the five W questions. What other question might you ask? Not when do you make the blessing, but help me out here. I'm going to ask, why? Why do you make such a blessing? We have a basic question, why? And when you ask why, I think there are two things you might mean. So one thing you might mean is, well, what sort of blessing is this? We have different reasons for making blessings. Sometimes you make blessings to thank God. Sometimes we make blessings to express our appreciation of something in the world. We hear thunder, we hear lightning, we make a bracha. We see one of the wonders of creation make a blessing. And then sometimes we make a blessing on a mitzvah, right? L'chav ner shel Hanukkah. So why are we making a blessing now on seeing a Hanukkah candle? Good? That's one why question. Then you may ask another why question, which is sort of the deeper reasoning, not, you know, what are we meant to gain from this? What is this teaching us? What is so special about seeing the candle that it warrants its blessing, right? And you could sort of sharpen that question, which is something that we're going to do, by asking a different question. Let me ask you, are there any other mitzvot in which you can make a blessing simply by seeing the object? Can you think of any? We have many mitzvot we do.
A rainbow.
But that's not a mitzvah. So that's good. There are many things that you make a blessing upon seeing. A rainbow. Right? Good. But this is not a rainbow. This is an object.
Say, Havdalah. Bore Mirayesh and Havdalah.
Okay. Bore Mirayesh. That's sort of similar. Okay. You're sort of remembering that God created fire. Okay. But this is sort of interesting. Like, you don't look at it doesn't say if you see a lulav, you make a blessing, right? No one, we don't make a blessing on seeing a lulav, you make a blessing on taking a lulav. We don't make a blessing on seeing a matzah, you make a blessing on eating matzah, and on and on. We don't make a blessing on seeing a shofar, we make a blessing on blowing or hearing the shofar blow. So this is quite odd that there is such a blessing. In fact, Tosfot,
if you see a king or if you see a large gathering, all you have to do is see it.
Again, there are many times we make blessings upon seeing something, but not upon seeing an object which is what we use, which we use for a mitzvah. Meaning seeing a king, it's like, wow, that's a special event. You don't see a king every day. There's a blessing to make about that. Seeing it tefillin, you don't make a blessing when you see tefillin or when you see tzitzit. You make a blessing when you do the mitzvah. So this is all. So what I want to start right now with is sort of the halachic analysis. And I'd like to show that that really lends itself to some deeper thinking as well. So here we go. I'm going to run the risk of sharing my screen with you, and we'll see how it goes. I hope it goes okay. Here we go. All right. Good. Now you see my screen. Pausing for a second over here. All right. So that's the first. We showed you the first source. Now let's look at the second source. This is Tosfot and Sukkah. Tosfot and Sukkah is bothered by this idea. Why are we making a blessing upon simply seeing the Hanukkah menorah? And he writes as follows: B'shar mitzvos, you go lulav a sukkah, lo tzakinu levarich l'roa. Actually, this Gemara and Sukkah is all about when you make blessings on mitzvah, when you make blessings on putting your lulav together, making a blessing of Shechianu on making a sukkah. That's the topic of this Gemara. So it's natural for Tosfos to ask, hey, wait a minute. There's all sorts of blessings mentioned in this Gemara, but none of them have to do with simply seeing, except for Ner Hanukkah. So Manishana Ner Hanukkah Mikol Mitzvot. Why is Ner Hanukkah different? So Tosfos asks, V'shar Mitzvot Gion Luv V'Sukkah Lo Tzikin Levarech L'Roah. There is no such institution, no such takana to make a blessing for someone who sees a lulav or sukkah. I think I'll be Ner Hanukkah only by Ner Hanukkah. Why? Two answers. And they might be fundamentally different answers. Answer one. Mishum chavivos hanes. Because of the preciousness of the miracle. Something precious about the miracle of Hanukkah. It's so precious. It's so precious that merely the sight of the Hanukkah candle warrants a blessing. And let's keep in mind, it's not just any blessing. It's a blessing which thanks God for a miracle, right? It is a blessing. We thank God for the miracle of Hanukkah, the miracle of the oil, which lasted for 8 days. So that's answer one. Chavivos hanes. V'gam yishum sheish kama b'nei adam she'en lahem batim v'ein bi'adam l'kayim mitzvah. Answer two. Look, some people don't have a house. Some people don't have a house. And therefore, they do not have the opportunity to light Hanukkah candles. They don't have that opportunity. They won't be, right? The Gemara says someone who lights Hanukkah candles makes two blessings every day. Someone who sees the Hanukkah candle makes one blessing every day, right? So it seems that there might be a primacy to lighting Hanukkah candles. So why is there a blessing on merely seeing the Hanukkah candle? Because not everyone gets to light Hanukkah candles. And by the way, the clear indication from Tosfos is that if you don't have a house, you can't light Hanukkah candles, which relates to all sorts of questions like, what if you're on a boat? Is your boat your house? What if you're on a train? What if you're on a plane, etc.? Maybe based on this Tosfos, you could argue that nothing you could do. It's not a bias. Lighting Hanukkah candles requires a bias. Okay. So the Chachamim were concerned. What about someone who doesn't get to light Hanukkah candles? They're homeless. What are they going to do? Are they away? Are they sleeping outside? Let's give them the opportunity to at least make a blessing upon seeing someone else's Hanukkah candle. Okay. And then Toso says, V'tam Risho Necha, I like the first reasoning, i.e. Chavivos Hanes, preciousness of the miracle better. L'tikshile mezuzah. So you don't ask for mezuzah, i.e. there are other mitzvot which require a house. Putting up a mezuzah. You can't put up a mezuzah unless you own a house. Why didn't Chazal make a takana that anyone who sees a mezuzah should make a blessing, unless that person doesn't own a house? So Dosos therefore says, maybe the first explanation is better or necessary. He tries to grapple with that. Fine. Okay, I'm going to ask for an answer now. I'm wondering if you can help me with this. So between these two answers, answer one, preciousness of the miracle. Okay. Answer two, that the blessing on seeing Hanukkah candles is for people who don't have a house. Is there a significant difference between those two answers? Can you distinguish between them? And this is sort of thinking the way that someone learning Gemara would think. Does it make a difference what the answer is? Right? We may call that a nafkamina. How might you distinguish between these two answers? Anybody?
If you're a homeowner, then making it again after you've done your own would be bracha levatala.
Good. Chaim is right on the money here, right? So if you, according to the second answer, it seems like making a blessing on Hanukkah candles is a backup option. It's not, it's like, listen, you feel bad. I mean, Hanukkah candles are so special. They're wonderful. It's such an important mitzvah. We would feel bad if you don't have the opportunity to light. And therefore, we give you the opportunity to make a sha'asa nisim ma'avosenu, at least to thank Hashem for the miracle, merely by seeing the candle. Which would imply that if you have the opportunity to light Hanukkah candles, then there is no need to make a blessing upon seeing Hanukkah candles. Because the whole purpose of the blessing is for people who don't have homes and you have a home, right? Whereas if you focus on the first answer, that is an inherent reason of lighting Hanukkah candles. It's not that, if you can't light, you make a blessing on seeing. No, there's chavivut hanes. There's something special about the miracle which warrants a blessing in and of itself simply by seeing it. Now, here's the thing. Most of the time, when you light Hanukkah candles, you know what else you do? You see them, right? Like, usually you kill two birds with one stone. But there is an inherent significance, according to this first answer, to seeing the Hanukkah candle. Now, that's going to be important. So what we're now going to do, when we now engage the sources, and when we embark on this halachic analysis, this dry legal analysis, of the nature of this birchas haroeh, the nature of making a blessing upon seeing Hanukkah candles, what we are focusing on is the significance of seeing them in and of itself. What significance does that have halachically? Is that a mitzvah unto itself? Is it not a mitzvah? Is it something else? That is an important topic, and that is part of the purpose of this discussion, beyond simply knowing what should I do. Tomorrow evening, when I walk down Bathurst, and I see all these Hanukkah candles, am I going to make a blessing each time? Right? Okay. So here you have a range of opinions among the Rishonim. I want to go through them pretty briefly, but you really have a range. Actually, let's think about this, sort of outside for a second, outside the sources. There are various ways of fulfilling the mitzvah of lighting Hanukkah candles. You could light them on your own. We also know that if you are away from home, you might have someone light for you in your house, like your spouse or one of your children. They can fulfill the mitzvah for you. And there is the option, if you are a guest in someone else's house, you can be mishtate peruta, you can give them money, and that gives you a chelek, a portion of the mitzvah, and then you fulfill your obligation. So we might ask, of all these type of ways of fulfilling the mitzvah, do any of them or which of them would also make a blessing on seeing the Hanukkah candles? Okay. Or what if I'm on my way home from shul and I haven't yet the Hanukkah candles? I davened a little bit late and I'm walking down, and before I get a chance to light my Hanukkah menorah, I see someone else's Hanukkah candles. So I haven't yet lit my own Hanukkah candles. I see someone else's. Do I make a blessing? Does it matter? Do I always make this blessing? So that's what we need to sort of investigate. So let's take a look at Rashi in source number 3. I'm wondering what you think about Rashi. It is not 100% clear. Not 100% clear. So here we go. Haroeh. The Gemara said, someone who sees Hanukkah candles makes this blessing. Says Rashi, ha over bashuk, someone passing through the marketplace outside. He sees in one of the courtyards, that's where they used to light, dole, the candle burning. Okay, that seems pretty broad. That could be anybody. It could be you lit Hanukkah candles already. But then Rashi modifies. He heard the name of his rabbis. Oh, the Yoshev Bisvina. This bracha is only required for one, someone who has not yet lit, in his house, or someone who was on a boat, sailing on a boat. Only those two types of people make this blessing of Sha'as Anisim upon seeing the Hanukkah candle. Okay, so according to this Rashi, and it's not 100% clear. Let me ask you a few questions. Right, looking at this Rashi, it gives us two people who make this blessing. Someone who has not yet lit, and someone who is on a boat. Let me ask you the following question. This is a very basic one. If I lit Hanukkah candles, and then I go to Shul to daven Maariv, and on my way to Maariv, I see someone's menorah, do I make a blessing, according to Rashi?
Probably, yeah.
No, I do not. Because if I already lit, he's very clear.
Oh, if this you lit already, sorry.
Only for someone who has not yet lit. Good. Okay. Then there's the question. There's this Yoshe Besfina. So what's the story with the guy sitting on the boat? What's the assumption about that person? Is the assumption that they are not going to light Hanukkah candles at all? But what about, is anyone going to light for them in their house? Not 100% clear. And then there's a second question. What if I plan to light Hanukkah candles later, but I haven't gotten a chance to yet? Based on this Rashi, although this is debated, it would seem that I still need to make this blessing. It says, "Lemisha lo hidlik beveso adayin." Someone who has not yet lit in his house. It sounds like that even if I plan on doing so later, I will have to make the blessing Sha'as Anisim by seeing someone else's candles. Even if I do plan, I have a house, I plan on lighting in a half an hour from now, but I saw a Hanukkah menorah, you have to make a Sha'as Anisim. That's interesting. I want you to think about that for a second. Why would that be? Why should that be? Why, if I plan on doing the whole mitzvah myself, I plan on lighting Hanukkah candles, I plan on making all the brachas, just because I see someone else's Hanukkah candles, I need to make a blessing? For what? I'm gonna light my own candles. Nice to see someone else's candles, but why do I have to make a blessing right now? I want you to keep that in mind, okay? And as we look at some other opinions, okay. Now in Torah 4, we have the Rashba, or Shlomo Ibn Aderet, very prominent Spanish Rishonim, and the Rashba thinks that is ridiculous. Rashba makes it very clear. Nistabra, Bishalo Hidlik, Lo Hidlikwa, Labado Peso, Ve'inuatid, Lahadlik, Halayla. When do you make this blessing? When? Number one, you haven't lit yet. Okay, that I think is pretty basic, although maybe not so basic, but that's pretty basic. Bishalo Hidlik, Velo Hidlikwa, Labado Peso. And they're not lighting for him. Meaning if my wife is lighting for me in my house, I'm not going to make a blessing on seeing someone's Hanukkah candles. And I'm also not going to light Hanukkah candles that night. So according to the Rashba, if I am fulfilling this mitzvah in any way or even plan to do so at any point, I'm not going to simply make the blessing on seeing the Hanukkah candles. Right? So Rashi makes a pretty strong stance here. If you would ask me, Tosfot again gave two reasons why there would be a Berchas Aroah Ner Hanukkah. The first reason was for Chavivus Hanis, the preciousness of the miracle. The second one was that the blessing was instituted for someone who does not have a house and cannot light their own Hanukkah candles. Source number four, the Rashba, sides with which reason, would you say, at first glance? Probably reason number two, right? Rashba is saying Birchat Haroah is a backup blessing. It's there in a case of need. If you have no other opportunities, however, if you will actually light Hanukkah candles yourself, then there is no blessing on seeing the Hanukkah candles. Okay, then we get to the opinion of the Riaz, Rishai, son of Ravilya of the Trani, from Italy. And he has almost the opposite opinion in source number five. I'm not going to read it inside. I'll tell you what he says outside. I know it's a little bit late. The Riaz says that if you have someone who doesn't talk about the case where you plan on lighting necessarily, but he says explicitly that if you are not going to be home when your Hanukkah candles in your house are being lit. Let's say your family is lighting, but you're not home that night. You still have to make a blessing upon seeing Hanukkah candles, right? That even though someone's lighting on your behalf, that does not exempt you from making this blessing upon seeing the Hanukkah candles. And the Riaz also says something else. He says, therefore, it's not just that if you see someone else's candles, you need to make this blessing, but say someone is far away on a business trip, they're in the middle of nowhere, no other Jews around, and they ask their family to light Hanukkah candles on their behalf. So they're taken care of, right? The Gemara says, if someone lights for you, that fulfills your obligation. Not so fast, said the Riaz. Riaz Paskins, that if you will not otherwise see someone else's Hanukkah candles, even if someone's lighting for you in your house, you're obligated to light your own Hanukkah candle. Why? Because since there's no one else around, and on Nesma first Metzla, there's not going to be any publicizing of the miracle. You need to participate in Pirsum Hanes. You need to personally participate in publicizing the miracle of Hanukkah. And therefore, if there are no other Jews around, even if your family is lighting for you at home, you are obligated to light Hanukkah candles. Okay? So, sort of summarizing, when do you make this blessing on seeing Hanukkah candles? On, I guess, a very limited extreme who minimizes the scope of this idea, we have the Rashba says you only light Hanukkah candles in a very limited situation in which you will not have any other opportunity to fulfill. Sorry, you only make the blessing on seeing Hanukkah candles, the Berachas Haroeh, if you do not have any other opportunity to fulfill a mitzvah. On the opposite side, you have the Riaz, who says, even if you will fulfill the mitzvah, if you're not going to see the candles, you still have to light Hanukkah candles and make this blessing to see the Hanukkah candles. And then I want to quote you the Rambam. The Rambam, and I'm sorry, it's a little sloppy over here before we get to the philosophy. The Rambam writes as follows. I think you can see here at the bottom of this page, he says, Kol haroe osa velo birech. Anyone who sees the Ner Hanukkah and has not yet made a blessing, Mivarech Shtayim, makes two blessings. Sha'as and Misim Avosinu, Bishach Yanim. The Rambam says anyone who sees the Hanukkah candle and has not yet made the blessing makes two blessings. Does the Rambam qualify that at all? According to the Rambam, when don't you make the blessing upon seeing Hanukkah candles? It sounds like in one case, the low beat rate, if you have not yet already made the blessing. However, what if I plan on making it, but have not yet made the blessing? It sounds like I still make it. It sounds like according to the Rambam, and this is how many of the Mefarshim interpret the Rambam, even if I plan on lighting Hanukkah candles later, if I have not yet they lit Hanukkah candles, I still have an obligation to make this blessing upon seeing a Hanukkah candle, like the implication in Rashi. Okay? Good. So a few different opinions. So let's try to analyze this for a second. Okay? I'm going to stop the share now. Get back to us. Looking at you. Good. Here we go. So here's my question for you. Let's take this bit by bit. Let's take each opinion. Let's analyze the Rashba's opinion for a moment, okay? The Rashba says you rarely make this blessing. You only make it when you will not otherwise fulfill the mitzvah. Why does the Rashba say that? How does he look at this Berachas Haroeh? Why do you only make it if you will not fulfill the mitzvah otherwise? Well, how would you explain that?
It's practical. There's no other way to fulfill the mitzvah.
Exactly, exactly. It's a backup option. Good. Okay. That I think we've explained. Let's now try to explain the Riaz. And by the way, I should say halacha lema'aseh, the Shulchan Aruch does a very interesting split. On the one hand, the Shulchan Aruch says, if you have a way of fulfilling the mitzvah and you're in the company of other Jews, you do not make the blessing of Birchas Haroeh. You don't make the blessing upon merely seeing the Hanukkah candles. That's if you will light or someone will light for you and you're among other Jews. However, Shulchan Aruch does paskin that if you are not in the company of other Jews, you should light a Hanukkah menorah, even if someone's lighting for you at home, because you're obligated, says the Rama, to see the candles. You have an obligation not only to have a Hanukkah menorah lit in your house, but you have a personal obligation to see the candles. Okay, good. So keeping that in mind then, how would you explain this idea? The Riaz, the Shulchan Aruch, why would it be that even if you have someone lighting for you in your house, okay, that you still have to light your own Hanukkah menorah to see the candles? Why? Why do I need to see the candles? What's the big deal? The Gemara says, if my wife lights for me, I'm good. So I don't see the candles. Why is it so important to look at the candles? What do you think?
Each act of looking is Pirsumei Nitza. It's a Kima Pirsumei Nitza.
My wife's doing it for me. She's being a farce in the knees. Why isn't that good enough?
We have to appreciate the nace.
We have to appreciate the nace. Exactly. Let's think about the blessing again. When you make this blessing, what are you doing? Blessed are you, God, Sha'asa Nisim Avotenu, who made miracles for our forefathers, in those days at this time. Right? So what are you doing? You're thanking it. So many understand that based on these sources, that there are actually two obligations. There are two obligations, okay, when that we fulfill and we light Hanukkah candles. There's two separate obligations. There is an obligation of Halakas Ner Hanukkah, which is a household mitzvah, that I have to make sure from among my household, in my house, that there is a Hanukkah menorah lit. But then there is another obligation. This is how some understand this idea, which is an obligation to thank God for the miracles he has performed for us. And I have to participate in that, and or that pirsum anes, that publicizing of the miracle and that giving of thanks to God. And even if someone's lighting for me, if I don't have a personal involvement in that, the publicizing of the miracle and the thanking of God, then I'm deficient. Then I haven't fulfilled my obligation. And, you know, I could have gone in this direction. And maybe here, I don't know if this is going to satisfy Dr. Malevsky, but I'm giving him a little of a shot here. Now this would be an opportunity for, you could say, the thinker, the philosopher, to think about why that is. Why it is that I can have an agent fulfill a ritual obligation for me, like lighting my Hanukkah candles, but when we talk about thanking, the obligation to thank or be thankful and to publicize a miracle, I need to have an involvement in that. That cannot be performed via an agent. And we could think about the significance of giving thanks on a personal level, that we all have to give our own personal thanks to God. Okay, but I'm not going to necessarily dwell on that for too long. I want to think about the Rambam for a second. I think the Rambam, and by the way, there is actually a tshuva response of the Rambam, where the Rambam, Karban Todah, Rambam says, exactly. So there's a tshuva of the Rambam where the Rambam says something pretty remarkable. The Rambam was asked, okay, it's really a crazy question. I asked, what happens if I light one Hanukkah menorah, or Hanukkah, near Hanukkah, it doesn't really specify, and I make a blessing, and then I light Hanukkah candles again. Or I light Hanukkah candles, and then I see a Hanukkah candle. What is my obligation? Okay? Do I make a new blessing or not? Now, what's crazy about the tshuva of the Rambam, if you are curious, it is, I can tell you where the tshuva is, it's the tshuva of the Rambam, I think it's Reish Ein Bey's 272. Let me make sure that's true. Second, I want to get the shooter right over here. There we go. Yeah, it's cool. Doesn't have any. I think it's 272 in the Rambam. Anyway, back to our topic of discussion. The Rambam says as follows, okay? Pretty remarkable. He says, it depends on your kavanah. If when you lit the first Hanukkah candle, you had in mind all subsequent thing Hanukkah candles you were going to light, then you only need one blessing. But if you didn't have it in mind that you only plan on lighting one Hanukkah candle, and then you got another one, then you need to make a new blessing. The Rambam says even 100 times. Now, I don't know why you're lighting 100 Hanukkah candles. I am not sure why you're doing that, unless you have, I don't know, a lot of people in your family. But the Rambam says every single time you light a Hanukkah candle, if you didn't have in mind to fulfill your, to exempt the other halakos, the other lightings, then you need to make a new blessing. And he says the same applies to seeing. The same applies to seeing, i.e., if you lit Hanukkah candles and you had in mind to exempt yourself from seeing Hanukkah candles later on, then you don't need to make a new blessing. But if you didn't have that in mind, you need to make a new blessing every time you see Hanukkah candles. Now that is pretty remarkable. Why is that? Why would that be? Why would the Rambam require us to make a blessing? Certainly from the Rambam, even if I plan on lighting it personally, I'm going to light it. I'm going to say the blessings myself. But if I see the Hanukkah candles, I have to make a blessing on it. And maybe even if I already made a blessing on it, I still need to say another blessing upon seeing Hanukkah candles. Why would that be? Why would I require a new brach on a Hanukkah candle? So here is where we get a little deeper, isn't it? And I think part of the question is, what does the Hanukkah candle represent? So I'm not getting too crazy here yet. I think a more basic way of looking at it is it's a symbol of commemoration of a past event. It's a Hanukkah candle. We're commemorating something that happened in the past. And that's probably the basic way of understanding what an Er Hanukkah is. I think the Rambam didn't look at it that way. I don't think he looked at it that way, and I'm not sure we should necessarily limit our perspective to that. I think a compelling explanation for why you would need to make a blessing each time is that the Hanukkah candle is not just a commemoration of the past, but it is a present representation of the miracle. That when we look at a Hanukkah candle, we are once again experiencing the miracle of Hanukkah. The miracle of Hanukkah is happening in the present, right? In this time, it is happening now. It's an instantiation of that miracle that exists now. Chaya mentioned, when you see the Dead Sea, you make a blessing. If you go to a place where, well, that's actually different, but this seems like it's a blessing in the present. It's a blessing of the Hanukkah, the miracle that is represented by this Hanukkah candle now. So therefore, what I'm arguing is, and here's where we get a little bit deeper, what I'm arguing is that the Birchas Haroah highlights the idea that the miracle of Hanukkah is not just something that we commemorate, which happened thousands of years ago, but rather something that we perpetuate in our present day. We see the Ner Hanukkah. Ah, what a miracle. How could you encounter the miracle of Hanukkah and not make a blessing? That miracle is now. It's in today's age. That's my argument. And now the question is, how do you understand that? So here is where we can go. We're going to go in two different directions. We're going to go with a more rational sort of, I could say, philosophical explanation. And then we're going to go a bit more mystical. And hopefully I'll satisfy both the mystics and rationalists in the Zoom chat. So here we go. One basic explanation of this is I took here from the writings of Rav Hirsch. I'm going to share it with you or read it briefly. Rav Hirsch essentially argues as follows. The miracle of Hanukkah was not about military valor. It wasn't even about simply the righteousness of Yehuda HaMaccabee and Matasyahu, but it is about the light represented by the contribution of the Jewish people to the world. The philosophy, what he calls of shame, meaning the idea as opposed to the philosophy of Yavan, the idea of the beauty of Greece or the Syriac Greeks, that we live, that they're sort of a, that beauty in this world or morals in this world are simply a function of what is beautiful, what seems good, what seems appealing, that we want to act in a way which seems appealing, that seems nice, that seems civilized, that seems enlightened. And there's a certain way to act that is befitting, or a certain way to think. And that is all there is. There's nothing beyond that. Whereas the Jewish philosophy is the idea that no, there is something much more beyond that, that our goal in this world isn't simply to be, you know, the most beautiful human we can be, whether even if it's that's morally, but we are ought to consecrate our lives to God. There is a spiritual reality to our lives. We want to take every single thing we do and dedicate that to God, whether that's in the realm, in the shul, or in the workplace, wherever. And it's the idea that everything in the world is meant to be sanctified toward the service of God. And so what Rav Hirsch then says is the battle of Greece and the light of Hanukkah is as relevant today as it was 2,000 years ago. Because that battle of the presence of godliness in the world, that battle of needing to sanctify our lives, to find God in everything, that is a constant battle. And that light of Hanukkah needs to keep on burning. Here I'll share my screen with you briefly so we can read from this collection. And Rav Hirsch is very timely here. Historically, he's really sort of fighting what he sees as Enlightenment Judaism or the Reform movement, where people were arguing for abandoning some of the ritual tradition, saying it doesn't really matter whether you light Hanukkah candles or tallis or tefillin, just be a good person, just be moral, just be dignified, just be a good member of society. And Rav Hirsch sees in that the same thing that the Greeks were saying, the same thing that those assimilated Hellenistic Jews were saying. And he's saying that is the fight of Hanukkah. He says, all the millennia of our history have demonstrated the triumph of Hanukkah spirit in Israel's midst. Israel is the one nation that knows not only the historic Hanukkah, but also a constantly renewed Hanukkah, a reconsecration celebrated over and over again, each time with greater inspiration and more intense devotion to the goal that was set for Israel from the beginning in a sevenfold height. Why should we lose our courage now and celebrate Hanukkah only as frigid remembrances of olden days instead of a preparation and consecration for our own future? Why then should we not kindle the lights of Hanukkah in our homes, confident that ultimately you'll be able to reach our goal in an ever brighter blaze of light? Israel began its Hanukkah by kindling the lights of its homes from light of the temple, but the new ultimate Hanukkah will be attained when the light tended in Israel's homes will triumph so that they may ignite the light of the temple to become a true everlasting light. So for Rav Hirsch, and I think it, but one of the points I'm trying to make is that this idea emanates from this focus on making a blessing, on seeing the Ner Hanukkah, which highlights to us the way that we should look at Ner Hanukkah, that it's not just about an event in the past, that it's something we're perpetuating in the present. That when we see the Ner Hanukkah, that we are encountering the miracle of Hanukkah. Rav Hirsch is arguing that the miracle of Hanukkah needs to continue. The light of Hanukkah is the light of the Jewish tradition of taking every single thing that we do and consecrating it not just toward ourselves, being the best humans that we can be, but consecrating it toward God. Okay, so says Rav Hirsch. But then there's another level here, and that is what I want to share you in the Sfas Emes. And again, the Sfas Emes here is clearly taking this point that the Gemara makes about making a blessing on Ner Hanukkah and taking it sort of to a deeper level. I'm not going to read the whole thing because I know it's late. I've probably gone too long already, but let's see what he says here. Sfas Emes. He writes as follows. He goes to his father, Adoni Avizal, Amar, Masha Mevorchin Sha'asta Nisim Al Re'iyas Ner Hanukkah. That the idea of making a blessing simply on seeing the light candle Hanukkah. Ki ha'ares hanisim heim behaneris. The illumination of the miracle is present in the candles. The miracle of Hanukkah, the spiritual energy of the miracle of Hanukkah is present in our candles now. The miracle of Hanukkah is there. It's still there. The same miracle of Hanukkah is still in our candles now. With the MS, Katuv Haneris Elokeinu Hashem, it says these candles are holy. They're holy candles. Venera, it appears, Kimiakarsh Tahaya Hadlakas HaMenorah B'Yam Melu Alpines. The lighting of the menorah in those days of Hanukkah, the Hanukkah miracle, took place via a miracle. Av Shaloh HaYashemen. The Israel holiday, they didn't have enough physical oil to light. It wasn't enough, and it still continued to be lit. So, which shows you that that light of Hanukkah, and yes, he's speaking in sort of metaphorical terms or spiritual terms or mystical terms, there's a light of Hanukkah that is not contingent upon having physical material. In King Galata, so too now, we don't have a candle, we don't have pure oil, we don't have the base of Mikdash, we don't have the menorah in the base of Mikdash, we don't have pure oil, we don't have any of that. Still, lighting, we could do still the same miraculous lighting of, quote unquote, the Hanukkah candles, of the Ner Hanukkah. Because this miracle lasts forever. Rak hakli lahalaka hazu hu mitzvas hadlakas ner Hanukkah. The way to do this lighting, this miraculous lighting, is through the mitzvah of ner Hanukkah. He goes on to explain this, doing mitzvos, ner, we say ner mitzvah v'torah, or ner is the numerical value, gematria is 250, there's 248 limbs, and then yir and ava, that when you do a physical act, and you of a mitzvah, you are sanctifying your physical actions. But the kicker is as follows. He says, and he makes another point here. What do we say? L'hadlik ner Hanukkah. L'hadlik ner. We don't say to light a candle on Hanukkah. We light the Hanukkah candle. There is a Hanukkah candle that exists, a spiritual Hanukkah candle. It is the same ner Hanukkah, the same miracle that took place thousands of years ago. Is it still exists now? It exists in today's age. That miraculous candle didn't stop burning. It's still burning, but we just have to tap into that energy. And the way we do that is through performing the mitzvah of Ner Hanukkah. Now, that sounds like a mystical idea. And what does it mean? It means that there's a certain spiritual ability that Jewish people had to persevere through persecution, to endure difficulties, and to uplift ourselves and escape sort of the bounds of our physical environment that's present in that Hanukkah candle. And when we light Hanukkah candles, we're tapping into that energy. And he sort of embellishes it on here. But like Kedushasly, when he quotes, taking this look at this last piece here and the source sheet, he says, we say that's the blessing we make when we see the Hanukkah candles. In this time, literally in this time, today, Ata now, every year we are enlightened with the miracles that took place then. Ach mikol makom lahargisha aras anes. In order for a person to feel the illumination of the miracle, sarcha adam lios nifrash me'ateva. You need to separate yourself a little bit from nature. You need to go lamala me'ateva. Ukafiv mash eno mishuka b'teva v'gash mislachon lahargish. To the degree that a person is not steeped in nature and physicality, he can feel that miracle. Kinesu lamala me'ateva. A miracle is above teva. Through the mitzvah ner Hanukkah, we connect ourselves to a supernatural realm beyond our physicality, our physical boundaries. So it stems from this idea of seeing the Hanukkah candles. What the Sfas Emes is arguing is that the idea of making a blessing when you see the Hanukkah candle shows us that the miracle of Hanukkah is present in today's candles. That if we can access, if we can go beyond Teva, if we can transcend some of our physical limitations, we can connect to a Hanukkah miracle which exists now. We can tap into that spiritual energy. So what I wanted to show you today is that this question of a simple question, making a blessing of Ner Hanukkah, has just so many layers to it. There's so many layers to it on a very practical level of what you actually do. But beyond that, an understanding what Ner Hanukkah is. Is it simply a mitzvah, a ritual act? Is it an act of thanksgiving? Is it both an act of thanksgiving? It's a requirement to publicize the miracle. Is it more than that? Is it witnessing a miracle that is currently happening? And all that lends to so much depth and so much appreciation. That, I think, is the beauty of Torah Shabbat Peh, the beauty of our tradition. There's so many layers to it. There's so much to connect to. And Mirtz Hashem, through the Leil Hanukkah, we will have that connection to Torah and be able to tap in to the miracle which took place 2,000 years ago and continues to take place until today. Thank you very much for your time and staying with me. Wishing you all a Hanukkah Simcha.
Thank you, Rabbi.